absolutely no idea how long it's going to go. So anybody who wants to leave at any point should not feel any reason not to. And especially if you'd like to leave to use a base magician, this match is still busy, so I apologize for that. But anyway, anybody who wants to leave at any point should feel absolutely no hesitation. So just to explain exactly what we're doing here, you know, the title has perplexed a lot of people, and you can blame Menachem Butler for this. But a rumor that's going around that it's not going to be what it claims to be is not true. So let me explain to you how it started and what exactly we're doing here. There was a certain void that had an afkamina that was related to something in The Simpsons. So Menachem asked him to say that over tonight, and then he was going to call that The Simpsons and Halacha on the pretense, and then we could then continue that whole topic, and the rest of it wouldn't have anything to do with The Simpsons. So we decided that's too deceptive. So basically what this is going to be is that we'll start with that void and explain that was related to The Simpsons. And then we'll move on to other clues that also come out of different Simpsons episodes, just say very short hauls on how they relate to Lachic topics. Not going to go into any comprehensive type discussion at all about these things. Just basically a word or two on each thing, one random haul on each thing, and then maybe one or two Makudas and Hashkafa also that come out of different Simpsons things. After Menachem's suggestion, so then thought about it to you know, come up with one or two other Makudas. And I called my brother in America, who's, some of you may know, has a very special bakis in these things, and he mentioned a couple of other very important Makudas, so I'll mention those, and then I tried going on the, going online for computer flows, got a couple other ideas, so basically we're going to discuss a couple of random disjointed horrors, again, with not any attempt at all, any kind of comprehensivity on any of these topics, just mention a short void, a short sketched outline of some of what there is to talk about on these topics. Alright, the void that started this whole thing, and then we'll move on to that to other things, relates actually to the episode about Lisa the Vegetarian. If you're not familiar, we'll explain the relevant decrees, it's okay. Again, don't worry, if you're not familiar, we'll explain. And then, so we'll start the ones that are going to get back. That's got about four or five issues in it. And then we'll move on to other ones. One just occurred to me just now, it's actually a good one. Okay, in any case, the void that prompted this whole thing is as follows. The Ramah in Hilchos Purim has a psak which got everybody upset. That the Ramah writes that if I want to give Shalach Manis to Menachem, so I tell Menachem I have Shalach Manis for him. And he says, you do, that's so nice. Look, you know what? It's okay, keep it. So the Ramah paskens the halacha, and I'm yotzei Shalach Manis that way. I don't have to actually give it to him. If I just tell him that I want to give him Shalach Manis, I offer it to him, and he says he's mocher, it's okay. If he rejects it, he throws it back in my face, it's a different story. But let's say he says, thank you very much, it's the thought that counts. So the Ramah paskens and I'm yotzei that way, that we've got him yotzei Shalach Manis. So all of us are very upset about this. They don't know where this comes from. The Pre-Chadish discusses this. They also they don't know where this comes from. How do you know that's true? As far as they know, the halach is, you chayav to give Shalach Manis. How do they know? How does the Ramah know? Quotes from the Ma'ari Brin, and Dachi Moshe says it from the Ma'ari Brin. Still, it's the question, what is this idea that you don't have to actually give Shalach Manis? It's enough to just offer it, and the person is mocha, that's enough. So this question went back and forth for a long time. I guess it's about 200-250 years. Finally reached the desk of the Chasam Sofer, and the Chasam Sofer set a yisod here, which apparently became federal law, that after that any discussion of Shalach Manis had to follow these lines. But the Chasam Sofer said that he seems that there's a machlokas achronim on the topic of Shalach Manis in general. That, it's actually machlokas shonim as well, whatever, not shonim, not achronim. What is the whole gather of the din of Shalach Manis? Ask himself the right. You want to know, you're allowed to, can you fulfill Shalach Manis by being mochel? It depends what Shalach Manis is about. So he dug up two sources, which apparently hadn't been discussed before that so much. They weren't found together, I don't know. So he said that he feels there's a machlokas on this question. What is Shalach Manis all about? So he found two possibilities. On the one hand, he quotes from Shlomo Alkabetz. Shlomo Alkabetz, if you visited Tzfat this year, so you know Shlomo Alkabetz is famous for two statements. One, he's famous for this statement we're about to say, and he's famous, more famous, for writing L'cha Dodi. He also wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther. I think he wrote on Rus as well. But he wrote a commentary on Megillas Esther. It's called Manos Halevi. So in this commentary on Megillas Esther, so like the apostolic in the end of Megillas Esther, where it talks about Shalach Manos, so he says, why is there a mitzvah Shalach Manos? What's that all about? So he says, if you look in the beginning of the Megillah, so Haman says that we've got to get rid of all the Jews. There's this nation, Yeshdan, Echem, Mefuz, Mefer, they're all spread around, and we've got to kill them. So in order to parallel that, so the beginning of the beginning describes Jewish people as being scattered and being spread. So the Manos Halevi suggests that this whole mitzvah in the end of Shalach Manos, that's to bring the Jewish people closer together. That's to be Marba Shalom Bereis in order to strengthen the bonds of friendship among the Jewish people. And that's the purpose of Shalach Manos. Alternatively, the Chasam Sofer also quotes from the Tshuvas Trumas Hadashin. The Trumas Hadashin, a little bit of context to it, the Trumas Hadashin apparently was under the belief that the purpose of Shalach Manos is really to help with one of the other mitzvahs of Purim. That we also have a mitzvah of Sudas Purim. We have a mitzvah of a meal on Purim. And it doesn't always happen that everybody has enough food to eat on Purim. So therefore, Chazal will also misaken that there should be a mitzvah of Shalach Manos, so that people should trade food around, and the people who don't have will then have enough to eat on Purim. So Chasam Sofer suggests this question that is started by the Ramaz Psak of whether or not one can be Yosef Shalach Manos through Mechira, if the person is Mokhla on Shalach Manos, he's still Yosef, he said it should depend on this. That if you assume that the Pshat and Shalach Manos is you're trying to make friends, you're trying to increase friendships, so then, Taka is the thought that counts. Then if you're after it and you're trying to be friendly, and the guy says, it's okay, keep it, so then you've accomplished your goal, you've already made the offer, you showed your will, and that should be enough. However, if you believe the purpose is that people should have enough to eat, so then the Chasam Sofer suggests it's not shaykh that we would allow mechila, because if we're going to allow mechila, that only the people who actually need the food should keep the shalach manos, and people who don't need it can say keep it, then no one's going to keep it, because everyone's going to be too embarrassed to not be mochel, and everyone's going to be mochel, and the whole takana is going to fall apart. So in order that we shouldn't embarrass the people who do need it, the Chasam Sofer writes, we have to assume that if that's the operative logic, that if the operative logic is the purpose of the suda, so mechila is not going to work. Everyone following this so far?
Yeah?
So the Chasam Sofer basically said you have two possibilities as to what the mitzvah Shalach Manos is all about. Either it's in order to make friends, or it's in order to help with the suda. Okay? Now if you read any of the literature in the past 200 years, you'll see, as we saw, apparently there is a federal law that was started that any discussion of Shalach Manos has got to be tied to these two points. You ask somebody, is it better to give Hershey's or Nestle's, they say, well, if it's based on suda, then it's got to be Hershey's. If it's based on making friends, everything's asking me this question for some reason. So, is it a miracle point tonight? Your brother point? Somebody on the party, either my brother or Malach, that when we're discussing this once in a while, that another asking me this question should be a statement by Homer Simpson. That in this episode where Lisa wanted to become a vegetarian, so she became very, very aggressive about it, and she was trying to convince the whole world they should all become vegetarian. So Homer, coincidentally, at the same time, was trying to make a barbecue because he felt he wasn't popular in the community and he wanted to have everyone come and eat by his house. So he thought he'd make a barbecue and everyone would come over and have a big party and they'd all like him. So Lisa said, okay, so still do that, have a whole party, but why do you have a barbecue? Have salad. He says, why don't you have salad? So Homer said, and then it became a whole song, I'm not going to do that, you don't make friends with salad. And then they're like, oh, son, you don't make friends with salad, right? So, right, so that, as somebody pointed out, that would be enough to mean, if we do pass me like Homer, and we say you don't make friends with salad, so then talk to the question of whether or not you can use a Shalach Manos with salad should be an afkamina. Because if you can make friends with salad, and if you believe like the Trumas, like the Manos Halevi, the purpose of Shalach Manos is to make friends, so then the Manos Halevi is not going to work. If it's for suga, so it's actually a Shalach Manos. We went to another Shalach, so then the question actually ties into something else. We're just going to sketch this also, but the question of what the suda on Purim requires is also a big question. That's a big discussion in Poskim, whether it needs bread, whether it needs basar, we'll get to that in a second also maybe. So that's also a big issue. So whether or not salad would even work, certainly it would work to be mashed in the suda on some level. I mean, I can use it to hold the basar. I know, for some tacos, I think, towards eating. And so maybe it would have some role in the whole story. So that statement of Homer Simpson would be one nafkamina perhaps of the Trumas Hadesh and Manas Levi, keeping with the rule that everything in Shalach Manas has to be, and also setting off this whole Simpsons Halacha discussion. So just to go to other Nakudas that come out of that same episode, so if you remember what happened next, so Mr. Burns is in the office with Smithers, and he's saying, right, so he's saying, Smithers, I think I'll, he says something like, I think I'll donate to Children's Hospital. When pigs fly, right? So just then, something happened with the barbecue, and the pig...
Lisa tried to pull a pig away.
So just as he was saying this... So the pig comes flying through the window, or past the window. So he just said, I'm going to donate to Children's Hospital when pigs fly, and just then the pig flew past. So Smithers says, so are you going to do it now? And Mr. Burns says, no, I still prefer not to. Right? So that's actually a good question. So would he have been mechuyev to give the Children's Hospital? So you might say, pashtus not, because we have a din that's called asmachta, right? So asmachta normally means that if I say that I'll give you, you know, basically the case in the Gemara, I think, is, a lot of cases in the Gemara, but the primary case in the Gemara about Mitzvah is you hire somebody to paint your house. And the din is, let's say you want to make sure he's going to paint your house on time. It's very important to you that the house gets painted by Tuesday. So he says, okay, I'll paint your house by Tuesday and you'll pay me whatever. And in order to show you that I'm serious, if I don't get painted by Tuesday, so you can penalty, you can penalize me, you can take off whatever, you can charge me whatever you want to charge me. So the Gemara says that if it's a reasonable fee, so then you can, such a deal would work. You can make such an arrangement that you can penalize him entirely if that's the deal that they made. But let's say he says, I'm totally sure I'm going to paint your house by Tuesday. If I don't paint your house by Tuesday, you can charge me $10 million and you can kick my whole business. Right? So then, Pashas says he didn't mean it. The Gemara assumes that's what we call asmachta, that he made such an outrageous claim that he probably never meant to pay it. He only said it because he assumed it was never going to happen. He assumed he was so sure he was going to paint your house, so he thought he wouldn't have to pay you. If he really thought there was any chance he wasn't going to finish painting your house, he would never have said such a thing, because he clearly isn't ready to pay you $10 million. So the Gemara says that normally asmachta is lo tanya. And that has nafkaminas for gambling. That's one of the reasons, one of the two reasons in the Gemara that there's a problem with gambling, because the general assumption is that people who gamble don't really plan on losing, and therefore the money that they give was never really given over with full gas, so somebody who takes money from that is considered to be stealing on some level. Not necessarily, I like to say it, but enough to get you involved with problems for ages. So that's an issue of asmach. Everyone following so far? So on one level, you can say the chances are this is asmach. He clearly did not expect any pigs to be flying. So he only said that he was going to donate this hospital because he thought he was absolutely sure there was no chance of a pig flying past his window. However, I think we're posting a quote from the Mordechai that by stalker, so we say asmach is kind of. So it may be that he may be in trouble here because, this is a very big asmach, but it could be that we assume for asmach purposes that for tzedakah purposes, smachta is kanya, and that's why there are some heterim to have certain types of gambling events sometimes for the purposes of tzedakah, to raise money for tzedakah, because we do have the source in Rishonim that smachta is kanya by tzedakah. So maybe Mr. Burns may not be in trouble. I mean, he's in big trouble anyway, but maybe he may be in trouble as far as this is concerned. There are other issues to talk about also, so what about the whole issue of vegetarianism in general? Yeah, I may have Megillus on this point. That's a broader discussion. You know, the question of whether or not vegetarianism and halacha mix. There are those people who believe that there is, you know, there are reasons to be vegetarians. There clearly are issues. Without going into a full discussion of it, you know, clearly Simchas Yontif is one issue. You know, we certainly can never forget the statement of Tosfos in Mori Kotlin, Daf Yud Aleph, which is my personal motto: Ein Simcha Lo Basar Behema. That not only is there a requirement of Simcha on Yantif with Basar, it has to be Dafka Basar Behema, but whether or not Simchas Yantif is the Raisa of Bezman Ezeh, as Machlokas Tosfos in the Ramah, the Gemara says that not Torah normally Simchas Yantif means bringing Karbanis. And bringing Karbanis, the Shamei Simcha, we eat part of the Korban and part of it is burnt. So that certainly is not Torah, when the Basar Mikdash was Kayim. So when a Beis Mikdash is Kayim, so then you really have a problem trying to be a vegetarian. Nowadays, when we don't have Beis Mikdash, so the Gemara says, so how do we replace the Shalmei Simcha? So the Gemara says, well, we do different things that make us happy, which is something we're going to get to later. And the Gemara says, it depends who you are. If you're a children, you like toys. If you're a woman, you like clothes, what the Gemara assumes. And if you're a man, then you like basher. So the assumption is that people would want to have fish, and it's a shayla in the Tosfos in the Rambam whether or not that's kiyum shel mechus yantif min ha'Torah or midrabanan. So somebody who's going to want to be a vegetarian is certainly going to get involved in issues as far as that's concerned. Shabbos also might be an issue. That's also a discussion, again, not going into all the pratim. It's also a big hashkafic issue. If you're doing it for health reasons, so that's one thing. But if you're doing it for morality reasons, then you do get into certain issues. And on the one hand, you know, we do have a belief in kindness to animals, and Sa'ad Bar Yochayim is certainly a value, but on the other hand, we also certainly believe that Shechita doesn't violate that. And we also believe that animals were created for the usage of human beings. And I think, actually, I heard a name of Rabbi Tversky once, that somebody who believes that you can't eat animals for morality issues gets involved with a serious hashkafic problem as far as his lack of appreciation for the uniqueness of the humanity. But you have to believe that human beings and animals are on a different level, and to believe that they're all the same, and therefore the same way you can't kill people and eat them, so you can't kill animals and eat them, gets involved with some hashkafic shadows. Without going into all the implications here, it's just something to think about. On the other hand, people who claim that Rav Kook was a vegetarian, I heard that his family denies this, I don't know if this is true or not. They also say that Rav Kook believed that loss of level, kind of hope this isn't true, there's a loss of level that after the Bias Mashiach there won't be meat anymore, that even the Karbanos will only be Menachos, that's Pshad, and Gavri Menachos Yehudim Yerushalayim, that we say in the Yiddish Menachos, that we're looking forward to the Menachos of Yehudim Yerushalayim, they're only going to have Menachos. That's a question, you know, whether or not you want to believe that, whether or not I want to believe that Rav Kook even said that, that's a big debate in of itself. As I said, the question whether or not Rav Kook was personally a vegetarian is debated. In any case, that's an issue. So whether or not there's compatibility between vegetarian and halacha and Judaism, that's a big issue in of itself, and so that's something that Lisa will have to take up. He also goes into a little bit the question of tochacha. So Lisa believed that this was appropriate, that this was her shita. At the same time, then she was very aggressive in pushing this on everyone else. So we do believe there is a halacha for hechach bechilas and hesach. The question of how are you supposed to go about that, that's also a larger discussion. The Gemara says that there is an obligation of hafresh. So you have to separate people from that which is asur. But on the other hand, the Gemara does say there's certain limitations. It's hard to read where it's going, because on the one hand, the Gemara seems to say that you're supposed to do it until the person hits you, which seems to sound like you're supposed to go pretty far. But on the other hand, the Gemara also says that kishem shmitzvah domer gavra nishma, kach mitzvah layam alibah alon nishma. The same way that you're mechuyev to say something which is going to go over, you're also mechuyev not to say something that's not going to go over. I don't talk about how to be miyashiv. This Gemara is in the Mekir Yosef also, and Yevamos talks about this. It's a question how exactly we go about mitzvah tochacha nowadays. It's possible that we don't really have mitzvah tochacha nowadays in its pure form, because the Gemara, the Chazon Ish points this out, because the Gemara Ben Erchin quotes some Rambam as saying, you know, halvai I knew already how to give tochach anymore, halvai anybody in this generation knew how to give tochach. So it's a question whether or not we really know how to give tochach properly. In any case, that's probably something that Lisa should have been more concerned about. That's a type of kash on her. Another one that my brother made, anyone familiar with tamako?
Yeah.
So tamako is a creation that Homer made combining tomato seeds and tobacco seeds. Right? And he came up with this whole new addictive fruit called tamako. So when we asked Mitzvah to create tamako, when we asked Mitzvah to get involved, tobacco is a question of itself, right? So if tobacko, if we assume that it's deadly, as someone discussed earlier tonight, that's already a big shower, whether or not there's any heter to smoke Bisman Azai. I say Bisman Azai because nowadays we have pretty conclusive evidence that it's very seriously dangerous. But leaving that child aside, but the question of creating tobacco. So we have an Isra in the Torah of Kiloim, that you're not allowed to mix seeds. So what about that? Is that permissible? So that's what my brother was pointing out, that I think we assume that Kiloi's run, the Chutzlar, it's his mutter. That Kiloi Akarim, mixing from the vineyard, so that's Asr Bahana. Right, that's something that's prohibited. I mean, Eretz Yisrael, that's also Bahana. So even the Chutzlaretz, that's also us. You're not allowed to mix from the vineyard at all. The Kilei Yisrael is also in Eretz Yisrael, but it's not also Bahana. So I think we assume that the Chutzlaretz, that is Mutter. Sorry? Greenfield's in America for sure. It's not in Israel. How much we know? No, it's Davidson. It's for sure not. I don't know. It's definitely not in Israel. It's definitely not in Israel. So in any case, I don't think it's in Syria either. In any case, moving on. Another thing that brother pointed out. This is a very chashuv one. So there was that time when there was a girl in the office who Homer was interested in, and he wanted to avoid her very appropriately. And this is actually a very big role model in this area, because he did totally avoid her. He went to great lengths to avoid her. And even to the case where he was in the elevator with her, and he jumps into the nuclear reactor to get away from her. So that's Taka Bikshara, because there is that's something that came up. There was a lawsuit in New York State about 30 years ago, I think, that we have a prohibition of yichud. There's a prohibition. Okay, actually, a couple of shalos. Okay, we have a prohibition of being alone with somebody who's an erva, right? So somebody who you're prohibited to be involved with romantically. So the prohibition to be alone with that person. That's the issue called yichud. The assumption is that's an issue deraisa. Why that is exactly, the Gemara in Kedushin learns it out in the pasuk, which doesn't seem on the surface to be talking about yichud. It's a very difficult drasha. The Pnei Yeshua, I think, writes that he spent 40 years trying to understand this drasha. It's a very complicated drasha, but it's assumed basically that yichud, at least yichud with an erva mamish, is in deraisa. The Gemara then says that there are other levels of yichud that were with different types of people that were yisurei drabanan, but on some levels an issue deraisa of yichud. So we also know that to get involved with Elias Mamish, a person to violate Nisr of Elias, so that is a prohibition of Yehari Vayavra. That is a prohibition that's under Yehari Vayavra. A person is not allowed to commit an Avera of Elias, even on pain of being killed. Even on pain of being killed, that's we have a din of Yehari Vayavra. So a big question in Rishonim is, what about Abizrayu to give Elias? What about Abizrayu to other things? Abizrayu generally means the things that go along with it. Right, you have Nisr Elias, and you have a lot of other Yisurim that kind of surround Elias, involvement such as Negiyah, such as Yichud. These are other Yisurim, Pashas Yisurim Deraisa, which are not actually the act of Erva, but they are Yisurim that go along with Erva. And that there is a large group of Rishonim that believe that if something is Yahweh Yavah, then even Abizrahi is also Yahweh Yavah. So it's possible that you might come to the conclusion that Yichud is also Yahweh Yavah. Not 100% Muslim at all, subject to Machlokas Rishonim. So then you can have the question, is one required to be Moshe Nefesh rather than violate the Yisur Yichud? And this is a question that came up a local Lamaisa. It was a case in New York State. I forgot, the Ferris wheel, a ski lift? It's a ski lift, right? Yeah, there's a girl who was on a ski lift, right? She was on a ski lift with a guy, and the ski lift, I think, broke. So the camp, the park, whatever it was, the ski park, closed, and the car was stuck up there, and they didn't know that there were two people in there. So there was this girl and a guy who were trapped together, a Jewish guy and a Jewish girl were trapped together in this cable car, whatever, ski lift, high above the ground. And they closed up for the night, everyone went away. So this was a situation of yichud, because everybody was gone. And the man and the woman were together in the young girl, I think she was like 16, and the guy was a little bit older, and they were together in this ski lift. And the girl got very upset because she believed there was Nisr Yichud. Nisr Yichud, she's got to avoid at all costs. So she jumped out of the ski lift. And she hurt herself very badly. She didn't die, but she broke a lot of bones. And then she wanted to sue the ski company, whatever it was, for putting her in a situation where she had to jump out. So there was a big lawsuit about this in New York State. You can look it up on Westlaw, whatever it is. Give the whole record. You've seen the whole case. And they took aides from rabbis to come and said there is a prohibition called the jihud. And so it says in the case, she was very afraid of the jihud, and she was very religious, and she jumped out. So that's a big question on Achol Meis, by Tzvisa Belovsky has discussed this topic again. Whether or not she did the right thing, and as Belovsky concluded, she clearly did not do the right thing. There's a couple of reasons why she didn't do the right thing. First of all, so as you mentioned, the question of whether or not Abizrayu to give Elias is also a Yehari Vayavra, so that's already a Machlokas Rishonim. So then you get to the question of what do you do if you have a situation of Yehari Vayavra and it's a Machlokas. So how do you assume? So that's a big discussion. This is Beis Yosef, this is a Shach. There's a discussion about this in a journal that came out recently, a year or two ago. It's called Ha'aris Ha'adam La'adam, which discusses in Yanim Rav Machaveh. And one of the questions that comes up is an issue of Habanis Pnei Chaveh Barabim, an issue to embarrass people in public. And there's a serious group of Rishonim and Anachronim who believe that issue to be a Yehari Vayavra. Includes perhaps Tosfos and Sota, includes Rabbeinu Yonah clearly, may include others, includes the Binyan Siyam later on, includes a serious group of poskim. So there are also many, many, many poskim who don't believe that this is Yehari Vayavra. So the question of how you're supposed to act if you have this issue, which we don't know whether it's Yehari Vayavra or not, So how do you deal with that? A suffix of the Rebbe, it's a big shayla. And there's an Arab, I think the author's name is Rav Aaron Buran, who discussed in this journal, Torah, all the more than we discussed at length what exactly the story is. It's a complicated point. I asked Rav Shechter about it once in a different context, and I think he would be telling me that you apply the rule of suffix of the Shlachil here, and you don't go Lechemra, and you do not have to know some Nefesh. In any case, that's one aspect of the story. So a little bit of a controversial detail, but something to keep in mind. Another aspect of the story is also, even if you assume that you do have to Moshe Nefesh, so it's a big question what that means. A person, normally when we talk about being Moshe Nefesh, not to be over an Aveir, it normally means a person holds a gun to your head and says, I'm going to kill you unless you do this Aveir. So then it's a question, then you're obligated to let him kill you rather than do that Aveir. But here, that's not what's going on. Here the question was, the Aveir is going to happen without you doing anything. And the question was, do you have to actively kill yourself to get out of it, to avoid having the very done? That's a bigger question, whether or not you have to. Maybe you could dash it, maybe you could say from the Gemara and Gittin that we talked about in the Vrazar, it sounds like that a little bit, because the Gemara talks about, if you're familiar with the Gemara talks about children who are going to be used for immorality, who jumped out of a boat to avoid that, but it's not so partial at all, and it could be that that's that a machlokas to Rambam and Tosfos maybe, I think that's what Reb Chaim, the first Reb Chaim, the first Reb Chaim in the Rambam, the Reb Chaim in the Sefer and the Rambam, and Halchos Yisrael HaTorah, so he discusses this point. Whether or not Mesiras Nefesh by the result, by whatever level, does that mean you have to just let yourself get killed? Or whether it actually means you have to actually kill yourself? That's a question that it means then. So it's a big question whether or not this girl did the right thing. I wasn't called Tesla, I don't think I was born yet, but it's a big question whether or not this girl did the right thing. And similarly, Homer jumping into the core of the nuclear reactor, one could similarly ask if that was the right thing or not also. Hi. So it sounds from that Gemara that if you're over in a very passively, right. Although, it's a little bit complicated how to understand the passivity in that Gemara. I mean, you're right. On the surface, that could be a good rabbi, but it's a lengthy discussion, a little bit, because there's details and understanding what exactly that means. And there's like one half a nazir and explaining how that relates to what exactly is going on in that case. There's a lot to talk about. But on the surface, it sounds like a very valid point. Sorry? Think they're all in the case. Okay. Could be the same. It may not be relevant, by the way, Malachi may not be relevant to winning the case. It could be as long as that was her mindset, you know. Maybe she wins, I don't know.
Are non-Jews highly hard by Yavar, or...
That's a big discussion as well. That's the only what?
I assume that Homer's...
Homer's at best.
Is Homer Jewish?
No, they pointed out, no, he's not, sure.
How do we know that?
She said, Marge, are we Jewish? And she said, no, and he goes, good, and he continues eating the pork. So, there was a commercial on TV with singing rabbis, and they were saying, can't eat pork, not even with the pork. And he said, huh, Marge, are we Jewish? And she says, no, and he goes, oh, good, and he continues eating. So he's actually not. Now, whether or not Gary Machayev in Mesiras Nefesh, that big discussion, I think the Agadol talks about this. The Minsk Agadol, when I say for Agadol, the first sermon is a lengthy discussion of all the enemy of Kiddush Hashem. So it's a big question, how do you know you have to sacrifice your life? That's the Kiddush, or the fact you don't always have to sacrifice your life is the Kiddush, or you know, how that applies to Gadol, it's a big discussion when you're not there in Machayim and Kiddush Hashem. How you doing?
Oh,
so right, that was another point. So what about the fact they were in an elevator? That's a big question also. Is the yichud an elevator? That's a big discussion. Of course, I meant to get to that. And that's one of the other issues that are relevant. So since they were in an elevator, that's a question whether or not there's yichud by an elevator. The fact is the elevators go very quickly. So you're alone in an elevator, but very, very quickly you're not going to be alone anymore. Or it's very shy if the door's going to open. So it's a big discussion in Poskim whether or not there's an issue yichud in an elevator. If someone's out, that's the truth of that. This is a big question. It's related to a couple of nekudas. So first of all, the assumption is, the Achronim assume that there is what we call a Shir Yichud. That Yichud is subject to a time limit. It's got to be at least a certain amount of time. That if you're alone together for a millisecond, that's not called Yichud. There's got to be a significant amount of time. What exactly a significant amount of time is, that's a question that the Gemara in the beginning of Sota discusses that, because there's a different halacha of Yichud, that when a guy's wife is alone with somebody after he's really told him not to hang out with him, so that's called Stira. And that's a type of Yichud. And the Gemara discusses what the Shir of that is. It has to do with how long it takes to do the Aveir and how much of that process are we counting in this whole story. That goes to the Shir of Stira. So the post can discuss, you know, what exactly the Shir of Yichud is. How long do you have to be alone with somebody in order to evaluate the issue of Yichud? On top of that, you could also ask, Samachron Taka, you talk about this, we're learning Yuma, there may be still a concept of Chatzishir. It may still be that, this post can be talking about this, there may still be that even if Yichud only means whatever, I don't know, 4 minutes, whatever it is, so it could be that even less than that, there's still an issue of Chatzishir. That's a discussion in post. But whatever the Shir Yichud is, so chances are the assumption is that you're not violating this or by being on an elevator, because elevator goes very quickly. A quick story about that, a good friend of mine was once on a date, and I mean many times he's married now, but once he was on a date and went to the Empire State Building. So in the Empire State Building, so they got in the elevator, and they didn't want to be there alone because they were worried about Yichud, so they were hoping that other people would come in the elevator. Happened to be, I guess it was a slow night in the Empire State Building, so nobody else came in the elevator, the doors closed and they went up. So the guy felt very bad about this, he thought he violated Yichud, so he came back that night and he told me that he felt bad about this, he was worried that he had violated Yichud. So I had the money, Hilchas Yichud at the time of Rebbe Aruch Salman, you know who it is. So I said that, look, don't worry about it, most posts can assume that Yichud is mutter on elevators, you shouldn't feel bad about it, and if you don't trust me, go ask Rebbe Salman, he'll tell you the same thing. So he went to Rebbe Salman and he said, what's the story with Yichud and elevators? And Rebbe Salman said, yeah, posts can say it's mutter, you shouldn't worry about it. Well, that's just like the Empire State Building or something. It's really well elevated. That maybe is a problem. So the guy thought that. I mean, probably even the Empire State Building is probably not a problem because it goes very, very quickly. It goes, you know, it shoots up as quick as most elevators. In any case, that's not the question. So whether or not there even is an issue, you could thank you a lot for having me. That's an issue in of itself. So the fact that Humber was in an elevator, that complicates the story also. So that gives an additional reason why chances are he wasn't the Chayyuf Moshe Nefesh. But you should look, he was talking very firm about this. And it's something to, in general, the whole episode, he's very firm about this. And it's something to admire. He showed a lot of fortitude. Something I'm not going to go into in great detail, but that definitely raises a lot of issues. If you see this one, there's really a lot of chachmas. The one about Xelos, about cable, right? So Homer steals cable, right? So Homer found out from his neighbor how to steal cable, gave him a brochure, so he decided to steal cable. That's a whole thing. So that's a big question, stealing cable. Pashas, you know, not going into details, not going to get into all the parts, and there certainly are Yisroelim involved. They're not, you know, whatever. Just want to discuss a little bit what the one aspect of one of the relevant concepts. So why might you think it's okay? Right? Why would a person even think it's okay to steal cable? Because you figure, if now I'm going into a store and I'm taking an object, and now I have that object in the store, guy doesn't have it anymore. Right? If I take from the cable company, so the cable company has just as much of whatever cellulose as they always have. Right? I'm not taking away anything from them. Right, so one might assume that that's what the Gemara calls Zenen of the Zelo Chaser. I'm not saying that's true. I'm saying that can happen to one might come to, because basically, so I get on that, so I get the product, and they're not losing anything. They have no appreciable loss whatsoever. They just have to have a certain amount of cables, which I take it now they have less, and they could have sold to somebody else. They have the same amount of cables no matter what. So the fact that I'm somehow getting the cable without paying for it, so why should that be a prohibition? So the truth is, the Gemara says already that that doesn't help. Because the case in the Gemara is Hadar B'chatzah, or the case in one of the Gemaras, is Hadar B'chatzah Chaveru Shalom Adaita. The Gemara says that a person has a house, and he's away for the summer, whatever, he lives in a flat and he goes to America. So let's say this is not what the Instagram code does, but that's what I call it, sorry, okay, we need more residences in a flat, so we happen to have found out this guy left, so he's not going to know. So let's go into his house and we'll put some kids there. One time, he's not going to know, they'll be careful to clean everything up, and they won't take any food, they won't take anything, you know, that's not going to be there anymore. And the guy comes back, we'll have the same house, nothing will be gone, nothing will be missing, and so what's the problem? Is this Zen and the Lochasu? So the Gemara said this talk is true, the Gemara says that you're not going to pay for that, unless the guy habitually rents it out. If the guy running a hotel, what the Gemara calls Kamala Agra, if the guy's running a hotel, so then he does have a right to charge for that, and if you do this, if you break into his hotel and you sleep there without telling him, then you are obligated to pay. So cable is really comparable to that, but even though it's something that the guy's not losing anything, but that's the way they make the money, that this is what they use to charge for, and people do pay for this, so that's called Kamala Agra, and you're obligated to pay for that. Hi? Right, so the fact that it's illegal is also certainly relevant. I mean, the parameters of the Machus Din are very complicated, but of course the fact that it's illegal is certainly something to keep in mind. There are two sugis about the about Zemach Zorachas, the sugim Bolkam and the sugim Bolbasra. The sugim Bolbasra uses harsher lashonis. The sugim Bolbasra has an expression that kofin al mizah stone, that we force somebody not to be in opposition to the principle of Zemen and Zerah Chaser, because to be it violates the principle. I'll explain what that means in a second. So that's the quality of stone. You're being a sodomite, and that's totally in opposition to all of Judaism, and we force you not to act like that. Is this about this? Anything else? Yeah. Yeah, but I think the point is, the fact this is how they make their money, by charging for this. So the fact that they're not losing anything isn't relevant anymore, I think it does.
So in theory,
they
could rent this
hotel
to somebody else.
Yeah, I don't think what the Gemara is getting at. I know you can read the Gemara that way, but I think the point is, even if they have many, many rooms, and there were a lot of empty rooms, and they for sure wouldn't have rented this room out, the fact that they normally charge for this means that it's not low cost, or it means that they have a right to get paid for this. I think that's what, I can see I included my other way, but I think that's what the money is getting at. Hi?
Is this case with people really different? Because the way you get your money on TV is commercials.
Not cable.
What?
Not cable. On normal TV.
No, but they also pay commercials.
Also, okay. But part of their money is by charging you. Whoever it is who charges you, I don't know how the division of labor works
exactly. They give up their game because they're
having
another
viewer. I don't know if it counts as far as the advertising rates go. Yeah, I'm not sure if it makes a difference. Yeah, the fact is, somebody has a certain pocket that he charges for who's not getting paid. And so he's being robbed. So, just want to mention one detail about this whole halacha. So the Gemara has the expression of a basher, kofra midrash stone, that we force you not to violate midrash stone. So a very big Talmud Chacham, who I had the privilege to run by, came up with a certain chiddush, which I thought Michlis Kavod, I thought maybe you could disagree with, that he says that if you're driving somebody, as though you're driving somewhere, we really go anyway. Right? It's one thing if you and a friend decide, look, let's not take two cars, let's go together, and we'll split the tolls, we'll split the gas, that's one thing, that's fine. But let's say you're going somewhere on the road, and you happen to see your friend on the street, he says, I'll give you a ride. And you're going to the exact same place, you know, he's not making you go out of your way at all, he's not making you go over any extra tolls. So he says, you're not allowed to ask him for the tolls, and even if he should, or to split the tolls, and even if he should offer, you're not allowed to accept, it's then and then chasu, because you would have been going there anyway, and kofra midrash stone, it's completely repugnant for you to accept this money. It's completely opposite of Jewish values. So I thought, to Mechilas Kavod Terasa, that I thought maybe we could disagree, because it's really just two sugyas. The one sugya of the Kama that we just mentioned is talking about a person who lives in somebody else's apartment. Right? You hang out in somebody's apartment, so you might have thought that even though you're not losing anything, you could charge from this. And the Gemara says, no, unless you're not going to charge, you can't charge, because you didn't lose anything. So you don't have any money coming to you. So only if you normally choose, charge. If you lost something, so then you can charge. But if you don't normally charge, so you don't lose anything, so you can't charge. The Mandal of Basra is different. The Mandal of Basra is talking about a case where there's a division of land, and it's all the same to you which portion of land you get. But to your friend, it makes a difference, because he wants to get the land that's near his land, so he'll have one big unit. So you, Dapka, wanted to get the worst portion of land, and you, Dapka, want to mess him up, so the Mandal says, that's terrible. Zen, then, and Zen, because what difference does it make a difference to you either way? And he would benefit if you let him have the one he wants, and you're trying to stop him from benefiting. So that's horrible, that's midas stone. That's a terrible thing to do. And the Gemara says, come from midas stone. So I think it's two different cases of Zeno Zolcha. So the case in the Bekamah, that's not midas stone, that's not cruelty. There is a case where you want to make a profit, but you didn't really earn it. So the halacha is, you don't get it, but it's not a terrible thing to want. It's normal to want to make a profit. The Gemara in Basra, where the Gemara says, come from midas stone, that's where a guy, Mamish and Achzer, a guy really wants to mess somebody else up for no reason. So the Gemara says, that's horrible, you're a kofra midrash stone. So the case of a charging for a guy for tolls, so that's a bit of a kama type case. That's like a guy charging for somebody within a department. And that, Pash, is, it's normally, it's higher, just the law is, he doesn't get the money. But it's not a crazy thing to want. So if a guy should offer, so there shouldn't be any reason why we shouldn't be able to accept it. And I mentioned this to Rabbi Shachter, and he thought that was B'chari right. He's not the person who I heard this from. And he thought that you could disagree with this based on that. Tosfos and Berakama quotes the Sigmund Berabasha, but the Gemara does not use the phrase, the Gemara Berakama does not use the phrase, Kofra Midrash Stone. And one could suggest it's really two different sugyas that are not exactly the same thing. Hi. Hadar B'chatzah Chaver Shalom Midaito. Okay, everyone following anything so far?
You
just asked what was the case called. Alright, the one other thing that was in the Gzeira episode, I think there were a lot of fascinating things in the Gzeira episode, I don't remember them all, but everything my brother pointed out, that this the clue was totally from him, that he says, I don't remember this in detail, he says that Marge took two grapes from the supermarket, and they were going, but the supermarket said that they tied it on him, and they said he took two grapes. So he thought that Pshat was that apparently was in India, you're allowed to take one grape. The supermarket took the mocha, if you want to take one thing, then the supermarket allows that because they understand that you want to be able to taste it to know what it tastes like when you want to buy it. But once she took the second already, so she already knows what it tastes like, so that was already an active zero that they mocked it on. The supermarket's not mocked it on one because they know you want to taste it. But take two already, so that's already an active zero, that supermarket's not mocha on, and that's when they had a time on her. So why topic did she take two? So my brother thought that it was because she had something breakfast, because take one, so it's breakfast more than the kazayis, but on the other hand, it's a whole beer. Right? It's a whole grape, so it could be that she was higher than a bracha one. So she wasn't sure, so she took two, but then that was already an exam issue, so they were mapping. Okay, that's that. Just to mention a few more errors. There was a comment that Bart made once, which I thought was very sharp. Bart was watching the Christmas special, and Krusty was hosting the Christmas special. So he said, I don't understand, isn't Krusty Jewish? Krusty the Clown is Jewish, right? That's certainly the definition of it. Krusty Clown is certainly Jewish, and his real name is Herschel Krustowski. And here he is hosting the Christmas special, so let's play on that. So Lisa said to Bart, isn't Krusty Jewish? So Bart said, Lisa, don't you know? Christmas is the time when people of all faiths come together to worship Reshka. Now, he was supposed to be saying that as an innocent child, and the fact that it's true. Yeah, we think it's all innocent, it's no problem to get involved. Well, we think, I mean, but people think in general that it's all innocent to get involved in Christmas celebrations and everything like that. It's not a problem at all. You know, it's just the culture. The fact that it's a very serious issue. It's very partaking in a desire. And the Bible was saying is true. Like, people who do this are really getting involved in real acts of on some level, of helping the desire. And the fact is that Allah goes even beyond that. At least the Mishnah goes even beyond that. The first Mishnah of desire. Has a din, which is Shaila Ha'ad Apostle Achla Maisa, the first mission of Isaiah has a din, but it's even prohibited to do business with a non-Jew 3 days before and after his holiday, because the money that he makes from your business, he will then use that in his Avodah Zarah practices. And even in a very indirect way, you're participating in his celebration of his Avodah Zarah. So that's even less than being on the Christmas special, which is very overt, but he was just doing business with a guy before Christmas. The Mishnah says that's a problem. Okay. Right, so that's very difficult, so we clearly don't do that, right? So how do we get around this is a big problem. So it could be, I was discussing this with Tani before, he told me this also, that we hope us, Toshus in the beginning of Vedazaya, brings up the question, I got a much bigger problem. December 22nd, if you get December 22nd, what about every Wednesday? Right, because by the Christians, so Sunday is their holiday. So 3 days before and 3 days after, that equals all time. Now every week is going to be totally covered by 3 days before and 3 days after Sunday. So Tosfos points out, for example, we have to have some answer how we do business with Christians. And apparently we assume, Tosfos writes, that we assume that the Avodah Zarah nowadays who we live among are not real Avodah Zarah, they don't really celebrate their holidays with real Femkeit, and we're not really being involved there. It's also a question whether or not Christianity is considered Avodah Zarah for their purposes. Certainly Jews are not allowed to practice Christianity. Whether or not it's considered to be Avodah Zarah for non-Jews is a big discussion. Most Rishonim hold that it is. I mean, it's a discussion that Shifas Noidim Yehuda, and it's a discussion in the Sfarim in general. They quote in the Rishonim that they have the opinion that it's not, because the Trinity apparently, even though it's something that's inappropriate for us to believe in, that apparently he believes that for non-Jews, that's not a violation of Vedazar, it's not a violation of belief in one God. That big question, but apparently for this halakha as a business, there are other reasons to be making. Okay? Sometimes, but it's not always true. Maybe sometimes it helps, but it's certainly not always true. I mean, if we were worried about Salah, we'd get into a lot of issues. There's definitely a lot of major issues. So we have to figure out why it's enough to worry about Salah. So I think they mostly assume like those things. Okay, what else to just mention? A few more errors. We're almost finished here. Let's mention two or three more errors, halacha, and then one void, nashgafa. In general, to discuss Bart and Moose's kiyum of Kibbutz Avraham is probably a little bit schwer. So we're not going to go into details on that. Probably there's a lot to ask on. But just to focus on one or two things, really actually dealing with Homer's parents. So there was a scene that was edited out of the scene with Homer's mother, where Homer's mother shows up again. Right? So on a later episode, we have the outtakes. So there's an outtake from that one. So which is funnier than a lot of things that we're not know how to cut this out. But it shows there was a scene where Homer's sitting with his mother, who he hadn't seen in whatever it was, 20 years, and he found out that she had been sending him care packages all these years, and they didn't get to him for whatever the reason was, so he had like 20 years of accumulated care packages. And in the outtake, so he was sitting there eating this food from 20 years ago that she had sent him. So she says, Homer, you don't have to eat 20-year-old candy bars to make me happy. So Homer says, but it won't make you unhappy, right? So that question of whether or not you're ever obligated to eat 20-year-old candy, let's say it would make your mother happy if you ate 20-year-old candy bar. So are you obligated to do that? So it's very possible that's not part of the definition of kavod. We have a din in Shulchan Aruch, a din in Ramah, actually. The Ramah writes that there are two exceptions, that normally a person is obligated to respect his parents, but there are two exceptions. So the two exceptions that the Ramah writes is where you want to learn where you want to learn Torah, where you should be, you want to go to, so you're not obligated to listen to your parents on that. And the second thing is who to marry. Who you can marry, so your parents aren't allowed to tell you what to do in that area also. But it's safe points out that if it's a real bizarre who you want to marry, so that could be a different story. But in general, in theory at least, the parents aren't allowed to tell you who to marry. So it's a question why that is. Why is it that why is it that your parents are not telling you who to marry or what you should go to? So, Menachem wanted to explain because there are mitzvahs involved there. Talmud Torah is a mitzvah, getting married is a mitzvah. So your parents are not to tell you how to do mitzvahs, right? Your mitzvahs are a different consideration. So your parents, the Gemara says, the parents are not to tell you not to do mitzvahs or whatever. Others explain, I think the Chazon Ish explains like this, that the reason is that's not part of the definition of kavod. Kavod means that you bring things to your parents, you serve your parents, you honor them in other ways. But they don't have the right to run your life. You don't have the right to tell you what to do all the time. So the things that are negated again, the parents ask you, get them a glass of water, so certainly that's telling you what to do. But the parents tell you, look, I'm going away for 2 weeks. While I'm away, so I want you, I think we have a chef here, for example, I want you to walk around the block 100 times. And they never don't know if you walk around the block or not. So you have no obligation to do this because they don't have the obligation, you don't have the ability to run your life like that. Kibbutz Avraham means you have to honor them, you have to do things that bring them honor, that bring them service. That's done, they can tell you what to do all the time, so that's not part of the definition of kavod. And Pashas, that's not true. That's the way the Chazon Ish explains. So if Homer's mother had said, yes, it does make me happy for you, 20-year-old candy bars, so chances are he still would not have been mechuyav to do it. The relationship between Abe and Bart actually could also ask on. So, okay, you have shadows on how Bart treats Homer. What about how Bart treats Abraham, how Bart treats his father? So we can talk about that as halacha. I mean, certainly there's a halacha of kavod towards all people, and there's a halacha of kavod towards elders especially. What about specifically off the fact that he's his grandfather? So, are you chayiv in kavod for your grandfather? So there's a measure in Vayigash. The pasuk says that Yaakov brought korbanos in honor of his father Yitzchak. So Pasuk doesn't say, and his grandfather Avram. So Major says, you see from that somebody is chayiv in the kavod of his father more than in his grandfather. That's what the Major says. The Ramah quotes from Ma'arik that one is not obligated in kavod for grandfather. There's no special halacha of kavod for grandfather. Certainly you chayiv to mechabed any older individual on any person on one level, and the older individual on another level, there's no specific chiyuv kavod by a grandfather. That's what the Ramah quotes from Ma'arik. And the Ramah himself disagrees. He says it's not true. And he quotes this Medrash. The Achorim quotes this Medrash. Medrash says you have more kavod for your father than for your grandfather, but it still implies that there is a chiyuv kavod for the grandfather. So it sounds like there is a chiyuv kavod for the grandfather, and that's how most Achorim probably assume. However, it still assumes, still appears clear from this Medrash, that if there's a conflict, then the father wins. The chiyuv kavod you have to your father is greater than the chiyuv kavod you have to your grandfather. However, the Tshuva Me'ave was written by the Beis Freckles, the time of the Nebbi Yehuda, excuse me. So as Meshach would say, he came up with an answer. But he said that you have the following Matzias though. If your father should ask you for a glass of water, and your grandfather should also ask you for a glass of water, so who gets it first? So you refer to the father based on this din that we assume the father has more cover than the grandfather. But the Tshuva Me'avah writes, I think the Tshuva Shtayarachim says like this also, that no, you might as well give straight to the grandfather. Because why? Because the father is now chayav in giving a word to the grandfather. So what's going to happen? So you're going to give a word to the father, and he's not going to have to get up out of his chair and bring the word to his father. So better, be mechaber both of them. Bring the water to the grandfather, it's a cover for him. And you also be mechaber your father, because you're saving him from getting up and doing it himself. So even though theory has it that the father gets covered first, but the grandfather practically in such situations probably would come first in order to cover for himself and in order to save the father to which is a type of cover for him. So that's a debate in Chirish. The Kli Chemda talks about this, and also let us follow and talk about this, whether or not this Chirish that Shuvim Yadla is true. So just to mention two more Nekudas. The last two Nekudas focus, one Halacha, one Mashpata, focus on the Halloween episodes. If you're familiar with the Halloween episodes are very creative in their own way, but you should know that many of them come on Yusuf in big mountains, that they're mostly based on Twilight Zones. If you're holding in Twilight Zones, but a lot of them are based on Halloween episodes of the Twilight Zones. So two of them that are, that they make reference to, so one of them, there was one where Bart was psychic and he used to want everybody to be happy. And anyone who wasn't happy, he would turn into some kind of funny thing. That's based on Twilight Zones, so the first Twilight Zone, the whole thing is there. But that's also a big question. So does even a Kodesh Baruch Hu do that? Does even a Kodesh Baruch Hu, does he make sad man emotions? That's a big question. The Kodesh Baruch Hu, does he tell you how to be happy? So that's a question. Some, it's possible that he doesn't. Because the Yisod, the Rev has in many places, that when a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to be mitzavah emotion, so he doesn't do it directly. The Torah is not mitzavah emotions directly. The Torah is mitzavah actions in the belief that that will bring about emotions. Even though the Torah is interested in evoking certain emotions, but we don't necessarily believe, no one's going to agree with this. This is where the Rev believed in Rambam. It's written in a number of places, in the Shiur Mazar Shadamori, and the Rishim Shiur Mansukka, and other places you find this Yisod, and in Ayat Shuvah you find this Yisod, that the Rev believed that when the Torah wants to evoke an emotion, the Torah doesn't say, act like this. The Torah says, do the following, and that will hopefully evoke the emotion. And the three examples that are given by the Rev in this case are, one of them are Simchas Yontif, what we discussed earlier. The Torah wants to be happy on Yontif. But the Torah doesn't really mean be happy in that sense. The Torah says, do this, bring your family simcha, eat flesh, whatever it is, and the assumption is that will bring about simcha, that will bring about happiness. But instead of directly commanding the emotion, the Torah commands the corollary action in the hope that will bring about the emotion. A second example is Avelis, if you assume there's a level of Avelis Deraisa, the big Machlokes Rishonim. But even if you assume there's a level of Avelis Deraisa, so the way the Rebbe explained in the Yotzei Shiurim on Avelis, that it's not the Torah only wants you to feel bad. The Torah wants you to mourn. The Torah doesn't say feel bad. The Torah says do these actions, and the assumption is that will bring about a feeling of mourning. The third example it gives in the beginning of Ayat Tshuva, so everyone asks in the Rambam, but the Rambam says the Rambam doesn't seem to list Tshuva as a commandment. The Rambam seems to say that when a person does Tshuva, is a mitzvah to be misvalued, so it's a mitzvah to do vidu. So that's a big question what the Rambam meant. And the Rav is quoting Rav Shuv is explaining along the same lines that really the Torah wants to evoke the emotion of repentance, but the Torah doesn't command things like that, so the Torah commands the action that goes along with it under the assumption that that will bring about this emotion as well. So whether or not even Kodesh Baruch Hu would do what Bob was trying to do here, what the kid was doing in the original Twilight Zone episode, that's a big question. So we mentioned one last episode in Mashkafa. So there is a very hurried episode of Twilight Zone, perhaps one of the most famous episodes, which was also an inspiration for the Halloween episode, which is as follows, called To Serve Man. And you need a little background in this. So, The Twilight Zone was written by Damon Knight, the science fiction author, who wrote the following story that became a very, very famous Twilight Zone, that the Woody's aliens are called the Canaanites, and they came to Earth, and they seem to be very benevolent. They seem to have all these plans on how Earth can improve itself agriculturally and biologically, and how they can make better food, and all these things, how they would help the Earthlings. And the Earthlings were all very impressed with these aliens. They seemed to really be helpful. And indeed, they left a book lying around on a table at the United Nations, and the linguists, they tried to figure out what the book meant, and they couldn't figure out what the book meant, but they could figure out only the cover. And the cover they were able to translate is To Serve Man. So then once again they believe, you see how great these aliens are, to serve man, they all want to help us, you see that's a riot, it's even the title of the book, oh it's wonderful. And then the aliens worked out an exchange program, and now they're going to bring Earthlings over to the alien planet, and a lot of people are getting on spaceships to go up to the alien planet, and the chief linguist guy was also going. He was on the spaceship, and he was ready to lock into his seat, and all of a sudden, about to take off, and all of a sudden, his assistant comes running up, and she says, don't go to the planet. We figured out the rest of the book to serve man. That's our cookbook. And he realized that really to serve man means they're going to fatten up all the orphans, then they're going to serve them as food. It doesn't mean that they're going to help them out. It means they're going to serve them as a meal. So that was the end of that Twilight Zone. It became a very, very famous Twilight Zone. And it was taken off by The Simpsons as well. The Simpsons, one of the Lawrence episodes, I see you now remember, the family was kidnapped onto a spaceship. They were all taken up onto the spaceship. And what happened was, Lisa, the aliens were very nice to them, and they were giving them this tremendous meals, and they had tremendously advanced technology in all things except the video games. They only had Pong, the thing they were tennising, and they were sensitive about that. But other than that, they had tremendously advanced technology in all ways, and they had tremendous food, and they were giving them all these sudas, kasudas, shamanot, pashat, everything, all these big meals, and they didn't know what was going on. So afterwards, Lisa, she's looking around in the spaceship, and she finds a book. And the book says, how to cook humans. So she says, I discovered what they're up to. You see, they're terrible aliens, they're not nice people. And they even have a book saying how to cook humans. So the aliens, they get very offended, and they say, no, there's dust on the cover, don't you see? And they blow off the dust, and you see the book where it says, how to cook for humans. So we're really all on your side. But then she says, no, wait, there's more dust. And she blows off more dust, and you see the title of the book is How to Cook 40 Humans. So then she says, you see, I'm right, you guys are bad. And they say, no, we're still good. Look, there's more dust in the cover. And they blow off the rest of the dust, and the real title of the book is How to Cook 40 Humans. So it turns out the aliens tackle were nice people, and they were very offended at this, and they stopped the whole meal, and they turned everybody back to Earth, and there was a whole sad ending. So this was based on this Twilight Zone. So for a long time, I didn't understand why this Twilight Zone was so famous. I felt like, okay, it's freaky, you know, whatever. You think, you know, all of a sudden the surprise ending, okay, it's freaky, but I don't understand why it was told the whole time, what the whole thing was, why this was considered so chashuv at all. Because a lot of the Twilight Zones have other chashuv words, so I don't see why this was considered to be such a chashuv word. So my friend, Moshe Shapiro, he pointed out that, no, this is a very big yisod. And if you look later at Ratzel and his closing to the Twilight Zone, you see it's Meduic, he was saying the right shot, that you have this perspective, you think the whole world revolves around you. Right? You think that everyone only exists to serve me, and that's the whole reason the whole world exists. So you see something called to serve man, you don't see one shot. The only thing that can mean is that this guy is to serve me. Oh, that's the only meaning. It doesn't occur to you that phrase could mean two things. Right? If you think about it, of course, to serve man could either mean to serve man or to serve him as a meal. Right? But if you're so caught up in that the whole world revolves around you and everyone only does to serve you, so it doesn't occur to you if there's another pshat. It doesn't occur to you if it can mean something else. So he had to be shocked out of his complacency and realize that he's not the center of the universe. That there are other people in the universe also, in this case, other aliens in the universe, and they also have needs. And they're not necessarily serving you, but the same sentence could mean to just, they're serving themselves. So it's a tremendous shocking perspective. You are the center of the world, and there are other people in the world as well. And that was also the reverse shot in the Simpsons vote, that it's the same basic idea, that there was a shift in perspective that was very crucial and was a very powerful vote. Okay, so these are just some of the hosts that come out of the Simpsons. I thank you for staying so late. And